have from time to time worked on developing employment panels. They tend to be popular at these conventions, but I can't say I've ever developed one with this kind of uniqueness before. I got a letter from Dr. Maurer probably maybe 5 or 6 months ago now, saying, I think you might have a blind guy out in Illinois who's a mechanic, and you got to look up Bat Auto. So I went on the internet, and I finally found Mr. Bart Hickey, who does own his own business that he's going to tell you about. And we all are familiar with one of our speakers, which is Laura Martinez, who is actually from this area. She's back with us. She is a chef at Charlie Trotter's restaurant. Doing this alphabetically, we're going to ask Bart to talk to us for about 15 minutes, and then we'll ask Laura to do the same, and then we'll take questions. Bart, do you want the podium mic?
Yeah, sure.
I'll give it up.
Right. Well, this car is automatic. It's systematic. It's hydromatic. Why, it's a greased lightning.
Greased lightning.
You guys are great.
I love it.
You are awesome.
That was great. Well, good afternoon. I'm glad to be here. Thanks for inviting me. Bart Hickey. As Patty said, I own my own auto repair shop. I was born blind. 1961, 2 months premature, so I spent some time in an incubator. So I'm totally blind. And from a young age, I always had a fascination with tools and how things worked and why they broke and how you fixed them, and probably got me started to be where I'm at today. I owe a lot to my parents. Especially my dad. He was a good mechanic, and he showed me a lot of things. Whenever he would be working on something around the house and it broke, I'd want to be right there, probably in his way. And it's through him that I learned a lot. And I remember as a little kid just having a fascination with tools and getting tool kits for Christmas from my grandparents. And to this day, I just love tools. I don't know why. There's nothing like walking on a Snap-on tool truck and I just like to buy the whole thing, but, you know, then I really wouldn't have any money. But from a young age, I had this fascination, and I did have more light perception when I was younger, so I was able to ride a bike, a two-wheeler, and when it would break, you know, I'd fix it. Get a flat tire, I'd learn how to take it apart and, you know, fix it. I remember it had training wheels on there, and one of them fell off, and then there was only one on there. Well, then one day the last one fell off, and I'm riding. I'm like, wow, you know, there's no training wheels. And it was just a great experience. And like I said, I always had this fascination, and from a young age, I was probably 9 or 10. My dad had an old car, and we used to work on that. And that was probably my first experience of what was under the hood. And I could just tell by the way the car would sound, you know, if it sounded good or bad. And I remember my aunt and uncle had this old Cadillac, and it always sounded terrible. And I don't know if my uncle was a great guy, but he never really fixed anything. And I don't know if he ever checked the oil or what, but I'd always say, wow, why doesn't he fix that car? And my dad died, unfortunately, when I was about 11. And after that, my mom would take her car to these places. It would break, and she's paying these enormous bills. And I remember the heat wasn't working. And we took it to a mechanic, and he said, oh, it's this heater control valve, and I don't know what he was going to charge us at the time, probably $50. And went to an auto parts store and described it to the counterman, and I think we paid like $7. And I went home and put the thing on, and we had heat. And I'm like, you know, it really inspired me to really get into cars, and I started basically taking care of my mom's cars and relatives' cars. And I had an aunt that had an old station wagon, and it wasn't running, and she didn't want it, and she gave it to me, and had it towed home from Park Forest, and needed a transmission and brakes, and I had no clue, you know, how do you take a transmission out? And one of my best friend's grandfather's old Polish guy was a truck mechanic, and I loved going over to his house. You know, he showed me a lot of things, and I asked him, you know, how do you get this transmission out, and he basically lent me his ramps, and I put the car up in the air, and a friend of mine helped me get the thing out of there, and it's like, wow, this isn't too bad. Now, this was the good old days when it was nice to work on cars. It was a 73 Chevy. It's not like your 2010 Ford Escape. And put the transmission in there, and the car needed brakes, and I never did brakes in my life. Well, person my mom worked with at Christ Hospital, a friend of hers was a mechanical engineer for Panduit, and he literally came over and spent the day with me and showed me from start to finish how to do the front and rear brakes. And I give him a lot of credit, because it's one thing showing a sighted person how to do something, but you got a totally blind guy that's not really sure, you know, you got to take your hand and explain how it works. And just from there on, it blossomed. I started buying and selling cars, and this station wagon was kind of nice because I was the oldest of a lot of my friends, and I fixed it and actually put plates on it, and now we had a way to get around. Didn't have to say, hey, Ma, can we have the car? And I used that car, and I just tried to figure out how to make money. I'd save newspapers and scrap, and I always had this ambition of, I'd like to be a mechanic. And this is probably in the early 80s, and I had a job at the Chicago Tribune selling Tribunes, you know, phone subscriptions, and I'm thinking, there's no way I'd want to do this all my life. And I went to Chicago Public Schools, learned Braille at a young age, you know, probably at 4, went to Brother Rice High School, graduated there in 79, went to Moraine Valley Community College, took some general courses, and I took a year of automotive. But the teachers to me, whether maybe it was because I was blind, they just didn't seem real forthcoming. And I'm not ASE certified, and I love my son. He's 18, and he's wanting to be a mechanic. He's going to school, and he'll tell me, well, you're not ASE certified. I said, yeah? Well, I don't care. You know, can you do this? You know, you come here and tell me how to do this. Let's see you do it, you know. And I think now he's finally getting it, you know, from working with me, like, wow, maybe I better just slow down here and, you know, listen to Dad. But I owe a lot to my parents. They never treated me, you know, like a blind person. They made me do everything that a sighted person would, and in some ways, maybe that's why I'm out of touch with other blind people, and that's why it's fascinating to come here this weekend. When I was a kid, you know, I'd go ice skating and learn how to roller skate or water ski and everything a sighted kid would do, and, you know, I didn't go to Lions Camp or, you know, blind, you know, things that a lot of, you know, new people might have done. And in some ways, you know, in some ways it's probably better, you know, for a blind person to interact with more blind people. But anyway, got out of Moraine Valley, and I could never get a job. Nobody really wanted to hire me, and I think it was because I was blind. And I continued working on cars, you know, out of my house, and I went for training in a darkroom, and I was a darkroom tech at Rush Medical Center for just about 5 years. And you know, it was a great job for a blind guy. Put him in a dark room and let him develop the x-rays, you know. And I also worked on the equipment, but it was a dying field. You know, today there's no need for it. It's all digital. But at the time, I did both jobs, and I'd got married in 1990, and I'd purchased a tow truck and hired a retired truck driver, and I was working in the hospital doing the cars and going along, and I probably owe it to my ex-wife. That's probably why I have the shop today, because I was never home. And we had three kids, and she said, you know, you better figure something out here. You're never home. You're working on the weekends. You're working, you're just never here. And I tell her to this day, well, you should have left it alone. We'd probably still be together. We never would have saw each other, and yeah, things would be great. But anyway, so I opened a shop. The first shop was in Blue Island, and I was there about 6 months, and the guy that owned it wanted to double my rent. Well, you know, forget that. So I borrowed money from my uncle and purchased the property that I'm in today in Alsip, and it's been a struggle. Things used to be a lot better 10 years ago than they are today, but you got to keep going. You can't quit. And the newer cars are a constant struggle, and you know, getting good help was always a problem. But you know, I'm always looking for ways to improve on the business, and hopefully if I get tech savvy and, you know, learn the computer, I can improve on the business that way. But yeah, you just can't give up. You can't feel sorry for yourself. You just got to get out there and do it. And if you don't, no one's going to do it for you. And I really feel that I'm blessed. And like I said before, I owe a lot to my parents, because I think it's through them that I'm where I'm at today. And, you know, you just got to keep pushing. And I wouldn't give it up for anything. It's just such a great feeling to not have to get up and punch a clock. It's, you know, punch a time clock at 7 in the morning like I did at Rush. You know, if I get up a little late and I get to the shop a little late, I'm the boss, and, you know, that's my problem. And like I say, you can do anything you want. You just got to put your mind to it and say, hey, I can do it, and maybe you need some help, and whether it's the NFB or your ma, your dad, your kids, you just got to do it, and it'll get done. And I don't know if it's 15 minutes, so if it isn't, why don't you talk to me and I'll talk to you.
That was great, Bart. Laura?
Well, thank you, everybody, for inviting me. It's a big honor. I started a little bit telling you about myself. I was blind. Well, I'm blind. I mean, it's not like change or anything. But when my parents found out that I was blind, was when I was a year old. They found out I had a retinal detachment blastoma, which is like tumors with cancer in both of my eyes. And I lost my right eye because I had two big tumors on that eye. And then on the left eye, with chemo and radiation and all that, I mean, obviously I couldn't resist all the heavy treatment, so I lost all my sight. I did have light perception, but through the years it faded away, so unfortunately. But that didn't stop me to do anything. I was very curious and, you know, wandering around, always feeling around, trying to see what was on my surroundings and around me and everything. And like Bart said, I also rode a bike too, a tricycle, when I was little. And my favorite tool was the knife. My in Mexico, we have a big house with a big patio, and trees. We don't have the trees anymore. But I used to cut the leaves and dissect them and chop them up and pretend I was a butcher. And I also love to play with sticks. I didn't have a cane back then, so I didn't know what a cane was. I didn't know any braille. I mean, I was just a wild animal. So I guess I had the intuition of the stick for some reason and the knife. And so I always play with that. And then my parents brought me here to America, and I had to start from scratch to learn Braille, English, basically everything. And it wasn't easy because I was very shy, very quiet. And I have people that witnessed that, Louis Montgomery and Pam McDermott, and people that knew me when I was in junior high and high school, that I was very quiet, very, very shy girl. Probably because I was always playing by myself. I didn't have any engage with any other people, other than my brother, but that wasn't much. So I started, junior high. I skipped kindergarten because I was too old for that. So I started first grade up to junior high, and then I moved to high school, and that's where I met Pam and then Louis Montgomery. And that's how I came to the NFB to, I guess, Pam talked to Louis, and they invited me to one of the meetings, and I became one of the members, and I attended my first state convention and then my national convention, which was awesome. That's when I started to get a little bit more loose, because I found that people were more confident, and being blind, it wasn't like you can't do anything. I mean, that was like a stupid reality, you know. That wasn't true. And I was like, if they can do it, why can't I do it? You know, I always been like that. Why am I stopping? And so I remember being at the Kentucky Hotel, Louisville, I think. Something like that. And it was a big hotel because you had to cross like a bridge or something, if I can remember right. And I did it. And I found different rooms and different meetings. I don't know where I was sitting, but I went to them and listened to them. And I just kept wandering around and explore around. And I liked that. And I was like, this is awesome. I want more. I want to do more things. I want to be more outgoing, more of myself, more integrated to different things. And I moved to Iowa City to attend the Commission for the Blind after I graduated from high school. Got that done. I felt that I wasn't going anywhere at the college that I attended. And I didn't have good experience with the rehab from the Iowa people. Sorry to say that, but. So I started doing research on the cooking school. Like I said, my tool was the knife, so it's like, I want to do something that I love. And I love knives, so why not? incorporate that with food? I love food. I love knives. Do something with that I have. And I did the research. I got an interview. I was honest to the lady that I talked to. I said, you know, I'm blind. Is that a problem? She's like, no, you'll be fine. You'll be fine. I said, okay, whatever. So I got my first appointment to do your tour. And I paid my fees because you also had to pay. I mean, because you're blind, they're not going to discount you or anything. You still have to pay. So I paid my fees, got my application done. And when I got to the school to give my tour and my assessment test to place you to the right classes, they freaked out. They're like, what did you do? I mean, why is this blind girl in this school? The Cordon Bleu is a French school. So they're very visual-oriented people. And they're like, how she's going to do gourmet dishes and terrines and pâtés, and it's no way. And they fired that lady. So I still didn't give up. They gave me another counselor, and she gave me the story that she lost the papers of all my financial information. I said, oh, don't worry, I have copies, so don't worry. That'll be cool. And they keep giving me obstacles. They said I need a physical analysis, something. And then that's when I called Patty for help, because, like, you know, what's going on? I don't know what's going on. I'm in Chicago. I'm pretty much by myself. I don't know what to do. I mean, obviously, they're not telling me you can't come in, because, I mean, they're not stupid. But they were trying to get rid of me. And so I talked to her. She advised me, and she gave me this number to the lawyer from, I think it was Minnesota.
Charlie Brown.
Right. And
we got national involved.
So I talked to him. I explained to him, and he's like, no, they're trying to get rid of you. Ask them if they can give a copy of the rules of the school and see if all the stuff they're asking for you is in the book. And if that is, then we can do something else. But otherwise, they can't do that to you. So I did, and to make a long story short, he talked to the president of the school, and I guess he didn't know about this thing. It was just between the dean and the director of compliance that they were trying to get rid of me. So he's like, I don't know what's going on. So I talked to him, and I was, like, getting very upset by then, and because I was ready to start school. And they didn't have any equipment for me, anything. But they were charging me. I mean, they were charging me $40,000, but they were not accepting me. So I was like, okay, so what's going on? And he's like, I don't know what's going on, but we will have a meeting Monday, and whatever. So we talk, and then he's like, but how are you going to do this? And my mother is blind, but she can do much. And I was like, how do you know? How do you know her culpabilities? Have you seen her? Have you worked with her? Have you testified that? He's like, oh, no. And I was like, so how can you judge your mother? How can you judge other people without knowing them? He's like, I guess, I don't know. We can talk more about this Monday. So anyway, I got there. We got the meeting done. But they just started me with one class. I supposed to start it with two, and they were being sneaky, so they only gave me one. And people were like, so when are you bringing me examples of food? And it's like, what are you talking about? I'm just taking math right now. It's like, well, no, you're supposed to take your basic one-skill cooking class. I was like, really? And I was like, so I'm like, I went to the compliance. I was like so mad. I was like, where is my second class? And she's like, huh? And I was like, where is my second class? Why am I just having one? This is not fair. You're taking my money, but you're not being, honest. If you're taking my money and not giving me my right classes, then I will cancel all my loans that I took out. Because if you're guys playing dirty, I can play dirty too. They're like, no, come down. We get you when the second group is. And I was like, I'm not retarded. I'm just blind, you know. I can handle it. And so they did that. At the beginning, they were very, a little scared, I guess. But, I mean, I had good chefs and interesting chefs that they were a little, you know, not sure if I will make it, especially the dean. And another chef that he actually told my assistant that, you know, take her out of here. She's no way she's going to make it. I mean, she's just wasting money and time. And so finally I graduated. Before that, I had to take an externship. They call it externship because a lot of people go to other countries to do their final test, I guess. So I went to the lighthouse. It was interesting. 3 months of working with this lady that wasn't very nice. She told me at the beginning, what are you doing here? Who led you in this industry? If I was you, I would just leave. And I was like, excuse me, I'm not here to take your place. I'm here to pretty much finished my degree. That's it. I don't want a McDonald's place, because that place is pretty much like fried food stuff, pre-made food. And I was like, I'm not wasting $50,000 on frying French fries that's already frozen. And so it was sad because her manager is blind. And to tell me that, it was like, wow. It was like a big slap because I thought I was going to find support in the site, but I guess not. But anyway, so during that time, they did a story on me in the Tribune. And CBS, the news, found out. And they wanted to do a video shooting of me cooking. And with them, they brought Chef Trotters, Charlie Trotters. I didn't know that he was coming. I mean, I know him. I mean, I heard about him and everything, but I didn't know that he was actually coming. So he did, and he watched me all through the whole process of myself cooking. And then he came, tasted my food. He's like, wow, I think we need to talk. And I was like, I got scared. I was like, oh, what, my food wrong or something? And he's like, you're working for me. And I was like, really? He's like, yeah, I don't want any other chefs to steal you. You're working for me. And I was like, awesome. It's like, awesome, this is a big honor, because when I heard a talk about him at school, that was like a huge dream. I mean, everybody wanted to work with him. And for me, I was like, wow, are you serious? And he's like, yeah, yeah. We talk about it more later on when you're finished with your externship and whatever. And it's like, okay, great. So I got that done, and I got some assistance from my counselor. He was pretty cool. He gave me some talking skills, talking thermometer and stuff, and he bought me some knives that I needed. So, so I can say that. I can say that he was very helpful. So, working at the restaurant, I don't have any adapting recommendations. Everything is pretty much the same. I mean, they didn't change anything for me. I didn't need anything to be changed. The kitchen is pretty small, so it's pretty easy to remember. And they're very communicative. I mean, we're always talking to each other, coming down, hot, knife, whatever. So, I mean, they treat me like anybody else. I mean, they ask me to describe a dish, I do it. They ask me to prepare something, I do it. And if I'm not sure of something, I just ask them, you know, how do you want this cut? Or I just verify with them, is this the right cut you want? And like, sure. And so it's cool. I mean, we're like family. Sometimes we have, you know, interesting days, like any place and with anybody. But other than that, I'm pretty happy. I'm actually starting to ambition to my second dream, which is starting to open a restaurant. I will start by little. I want to start a little business and work myself up, but I'm actually engaged to do that now. That's like, it's like an urge now that I feel that I need to do. Guess I'm ready for it. Well, I don't know if that's 15 minutes, but I don't know what else to tell you. Thank you so much.
Very nice. We're going to take questions. Charlene, let's get you a mic. Did we find the mic? Thank you. We're one step closer. Gina and then Debbie Pittman.
Okay, my question.
Charlene, I'm sorry.
My question is this. Was anything that you learned when you were at Illinois School for the Visually Impaired helpful to your cooking, or was that just something that you developed on your own?
I guess it helped. It helped me a lot because it gave me independence on myself. I got detached from my mother and all the mothering, caring. So I had to learn how to cook and take care of myself. So I guess that was part of it too. But also, I guess I had it in my blood as well.
Debbie Pittman is next.
Okay, I have two questions. At the time that you entered the school, did you know how to cook? And did you get your set of knives?
I did know the basics, but not like the gourmet stuff and all the fancy French ways. But I did know how to cook, basically, a little bit. And I did get my knives up on my set. That was part of the school the school equipment, I guess, that came with the loan that I borrowed from.
That's going to be your trademark here, Laura. Everardo, get him a mic, please. It's Everardo, people. We do have an Eduardo, but this is Everardo.
Yeah, this is for Laura.
Okay.
Question one, how long have you been in Charlie's Trotter restaurant?
Almost 2 years.
Great. And second, do you have any name picked out already for the restaurant that you want to open?
Yes, La Diosa.
Beautiful.
Which means La Goddess.
Let us know where you where you're located, so
Excuse
we can all visit you.
Where are you going to be located?
My idea was eventually Miami, but since I got my first opportunity here in Chicago, I think it's reasonable to start here.
Why do all our good people want to move somewhere else?
Because it's too cold.
Other questions?
Any questions?
Who is that?
It's Greg.
Gregory, you know how to do this.
Oh, yes, I do.
Then say your name.
I did. My name's Greg Rosenberg from Tinley Park. I'm an NFB Chicago chapter member.
All right.
We'll put it all out there. Why not? My entire family happens to be chefs. From my great-grandmother to my grandmother on down to my daughter and my son-in-law. My daughter went to Le Cordon Bleu. I have not only the utmost respect for your accomplishment, but you brought tears to my eyes.
Oh, thank you.
When she called me with her story about cooking school, tears were not in my eyes. I was pretty hot about the whole thing.
Yes, she was.
But we got it fixed.
Yeah.
Any other questions? Who? Oh, Saif, go ahead.
Yep. Mohammed Saifullah. Well, do you have any sort of advice for students who are progressing through college and with a visual disability?
Definitely, to be pretty much keep going. Don't listen to ignorant people that they don't know what they're talking about. Don't let them pretty much fool you. You know, you can decide for yourself, and nobody's going to detain you unless you permit that. It's up to you whether you want to sit or you want to keep walking and discover new adventures.
If I decided to not do everything that someone at one time in my life told me I couldn't do, I'd be doing nothing. And I mean nothing. Lois is next. Go ahead, Lois.
Okay. Laura started here in the Quad Cities in the Black Hawk chapter. I was one of the first ones that met Laura. Yeah. And she is the Black Hawk success story. Yeah. We are so proud of you, Laura. You go, girl.
Thank you.
Patty, one quick one.
One quick one, really quick.
When I was 8 years old, I had thought long and hard about this, and I put a sign up in my bedroom that says, "No simply means there's a different or better way."
No simply means there's a different or better way. Give them a hand, you guys. What a very interesting and informative panel. Thank you, guys. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.